Welcome to the Jerusalem Post podcast. I'm Yaakov Katz and joined as always by Lahav Harkov. And Lahav, unfortunately, I think I'm the one who has to tell you, you're not going to be invited to the barbecue in the end. There's not going to be a barbecue.
Oh man, I was really looking forward to the barbecue.
Why don't we tell people what barbecue we're talking about?
Yes, is that Bennett wanted to do something sort of cool, interesting, have a good picture with President Biden when he visits Israel. And one of the things he was considering was barbecuing with him. But that looks like it's, well, we know for sure that it's not going to happen because...
Well, definitely Bennett's not going to be barbecuing. Yair Lapid might be the man manning the grill with Joe Biden, right? You think Yair Lapid knows how to, his way around a barbecue?
I don't think so. And I also think that Lapid would have other ideas of cool, fun things to do. You know, when he was in the UK, I believe it was late last year, Boris Johnson told a story of visiting Israel like 20 years ago or something, and like Lapid taking him out to like clubs, and they were like dancing on tables, and there were even like some photographs. So not that Lapid is clubbing so much these days. I don't think he has time, and he's gonna have even less time if he's gonna be prime minister as of next week.
I also don't think that Joe Biden is in a position to go clubbing these days. If anyone watched him fall off his bicycle over the weekend, I don't know if jumping on tables is the right move for him.
That is true as well. But Lapid has other ideas of fun than Bennett, who's the kind of guy who likes to go hiking and camping.
So basically, Lahav, Monday night, Bennett and Lapid gather. What's interesting is that there was a briefing earlier in the day for you and other diplomatic reporters. And at that briefing, Bennett spent 2 hours with reporters, made no mention of anything that had to do with the fact that he's about to drop this bombshell that him and Lapid have decided to bring this law to disperse the Knesset. And just a few hours later, suddenly everything changed. What happened?
Yeah, it's even funnier than that because, and this is something that was supposed to be completely off the record, but then so many people tweeted it that I feel okay saying it. He was asked, do you think you're going to be prime minister? Do you think you're going to greet President Biden on the tarmac when he arrives in Israel? And Bennett took off his reading glasses and like shrugged his shoulders and was just like, I don't know. But he knew, he totally knew, because like 2 hours after the briefing ended, he announced that he and Lapid agreed to dissolve the Knesset in the next week, and that Lapid's going to be interim prime minister.
Right. I'm not sure you agree with me, Lahav, and I'm interested to hear your take, but there's a part of me that totally gets why this happened, right? The government, they lost their coalition. Bennett lost his party. It was crumbling. It was a matter of time. And you had that countdown and that deadline to the Judea and Samaria regulations that were going to expire at the end of the month. And then that could, if they weren't renewed and they weren't going to get renewed because they didn't have the votes, it would lead to chaos and anarchy and legal status, and et cetera.
And we had talked, I mean, we basically had a whole podcast episode about this, that like people wouldn't be able to vote. People wouldn't be able to get their free medical care. You know, people wouldn't get their mail, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So I totally get why they might have been left with no choice. But there's a part of me, and this might have been the right move, right? Israel can't be stuck like this. On the other hand, there's a part of me that feels this was a government that I think, you know, deserves credit for trying to do something different, for bringing right and left together, for bringing Arabs into the government for the first time. I think they deserve some credit for this attempt to try a whole new equation for the state of Israel.
I am of two minds about it, because on the one hand, I like the idea of everyone being able to work together. I like the idea of Mansour Abbas being an Arab leader who accepts that Israel is a Jewish state and wants to work inside the game instead of, you know, basically having one foot out the door all the time, the way the joint list does. But at the same time, I think that this was a government that was built on being against something, Bibi,
right,
as opposed to being for something, and that it reflects a certain like death of ideology and cynicism in politics. Because politics has always been cynical, yeah, but, you know, it's politics that's more personal than about actual beliefs. And I think that has been bad for our politics.
So let's talk a moment about Naftali Bennett, right? What's his next move? I see a few options. One of the ones that seems to me to be most likely is he retires. He goes home. He's got nothing to stay around for.
Yeah. I mean, he reached the pinnacle. He became prime minister. And it looks like he would probably be humiliated if he ran now. I mean, he already in the 2019, in the early 2019, didn't pass the electoral threshold. So it's clearly a possibility, and his poll numbers aren't great. And at the same time, he has a lot of money from high tech. He could always go back to high tech. Look at Ehud Barak, or look at even Benny Gantz in between the army and politics. There's a lot of potential for him there to just go back and make more money.
The cannabis business. That's what all these guys go into.
Right, right. Well, his experience is in cybersecurity, which is also very hot. So, you know, he could definitely go back to that. And then at the same time, maybe run some kind of like foundation or something that has to deal with the actual causes that he cares about.
He should hire you to, prepare him for his new career. You got it all planned out, Lahav.
Yeah.
Let's talk a moment. These elections, they're probably going to take place sometime in October, right? After the Jewish holiday season, after the Chagim. Lapid is going to be coming at those elections from a position of power if he is the prime minister. And he'll have 20 seats now, and polls show that he's, you know, pretty much staying at those 20, but maybe he'll get a bump now if he's prime minister. But Bibi Netanyahu is coming into this election extremely strong, right? He's polling at 35, 36 seats. But he's still not at the 61, even when you put all those little parties together, right? He's still shy of that number that he needs to get the coalition.
It's a long shot, but we shouldn't completely rule out the chance that he can come up with a coalition in the next week.
Explain to us that process. How would that work?
Look, I'm not totally sure how he gets there, right? Because he does not have 61, and he doesn't have 60, and he doesn't have 59. But he has like half of Bennett's party and could probably pull more people to his side with promises and keep putting pressure on Gideon Saar's party. Maybe Gideon Saar himself won't sit with Bibi anymore, but possibly other people, Sharon Haskell, Zev Elkin, Yifat Shasha Biton, maybe they would be willing to jump ship, and that's how Bibi could cobble together a coalition. It's a long shot, but the thing is, that this is all happening, you could say that this is all happening because of Bibi, right? We talked about this Judea and Samaria bill, right? Even though Bibi and his whole bloc support Israeli control over Judea and Samaria, and in fact, Bibi tried to, you know, get Israel to annex parts of Judea and Samaria, they were voting against it because they said, we will not support anything coming from this coalition. And their entire goal was to bring the coalition down, even if they had to vote against their ideology to do it. And it worked.
I mean, let's also just point out that Gideon Saar's party is not really crossing the threshold at the moment, right? Polls show that he's not even 0.5% above the threshold, which pretty much means you're not crossing the threshold. So the people in his party would have to make a calculated risk if they want to run, or if they want to ditch Gideon Saar, who, after the announcement was made that we're going to an election, he came out right away and said, this is about stopping Netanyahu. So it doesn't seem like he would go, but like you said, other people in his party might do that. And they might be thinking about their political interests, and that would, you know, Bibi would give them that lifeline that would spare them an election that might see them get kicked out of the Knesset. So the next few days are definitely going to be fascinating and interesting, because Netanyahu probably would prefer that, and he'll want to try and see if he can make that happen. Lahav, you've spent a lot of time with Yair Lapid over the years. He's been in politics now for about 10 years. Tell us what he is going to be like as prime minister. What should we expect? What type of person is he?
He is the smoothest of smooth operators. If people haven't picked up on that, he will always be picture perfect. He will always be completely prepared to give his speech really well. And he speaks well in English too. He has an accent. He's not like Netanyahu or Bennett that speak with an American accent, but he still speaks very well. So for starters, you know, he wants to be, and he will be, the sort of prime minister out of central casting. But I think, you know, he's only going to be prime minister for 3 months. On major policy issues, he and Bennett had to reach agreement.
Hold on. That's 3 months. That's 3 months till the election, or it might even be closer to 4 months till an election. But then he stays on and during the interim period. And we've seen that those periods can last for a long time,
which is supposed to be 6 to 8. Optimistically, it's 6 to 8 weeks because we'll get a government. If we don't get a government, then yes, it could last much, 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 much longer. So something like 5 months. I think that he's looking for continuity and isn't going to be making drastic changes. But I do see some talk of the sort of quote unquote anti-BB laws of them trying to pass those laws in the Knesset in the interim, or in the next week even, laws that would not allow someone who was indicted to run for prime minister, for example. So, you know, stay tuned. I mean, those are things that are important to Lapid. Also, religion and state issues, liberalizing those things are pretty important for Lapid. Again, there's not that much you can do on the legislative front in this interim situation. So, and a lot of the domestic issues, which really were his focus for most of his political career, I think he's not going to be able to do much in the meantime. But he's going to continue to be foreign minister. And I think, you know, it'll be great for him to be traveling the world. So he'll probably go to whichever leaders will take him. And that'll be good for his election campaign.
The other thing that strikes me about Lapid is that he's been working on this for a long time, right? He's built up the entire staff, the support system. But we've spoken a lot about the way people have jumped ship out of Bennett's office and how that kind of was a telling of what we're heading towards, but also it said something about the staff that he had built around him, right? On the other hand, Lapid, I think, really has been preparing for this moment, right? He built a party that was meant to be a ruling party. He built a staff that was meant to support a ruler in the government. This is what he's prepared for. So I would also think, like you said, he's a smooth operator, but I have a feeling that he's coming with a lot of ideas what he wants to do and with the plan in place of how to get it done.
Maybe, but I still think that there's legal obstacles to a lot of the things that he'd want to get done as long as he's considered the prime minister of an interim government. So it would be different. It depends if he wins or not in the election or is able to form a government after the election.
That goes without saying. And boy, is this going to be interesting. I mean, who 5 elections, Lahav, in 3.5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy, right? This is really crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people talk about, like, people compare it to Italy. But the truth is that Italy changes governments a lot without elections, and we have not been able to do that here in Israel. Not much.
We haven't been able to do that, and it's unfortunate. But listen, this is what we have. This is the country. This is the state of Israel. This is the Jewish people. We got to figure out a way to make it work, right? We're going to have to cover another election.
We managed to be great in a lot of ways, even if our politics are a mess.
Yes. And covering another election, you know, that takes a toll, I have to say. I remember when I was in the beginning, back in 2018, when we went to the first of these 5 elections, I said, okay, cool. Then, you know, I now had an election. Then there was, you know, there were Gaza wars. I kind of checked off all the boxes. Little did I ever imagine that have to be the editor of a newspaper through 5 elections. That's a lot. But we'll get through this, and the Jerusalem Post will be there to tell you these stories. We have for you this week a special podcast. We recorded a conversation before the elections were announced with Gil Hoffman, the longtime veteran Jerusalem Post political correspondent, who's stepping down after 24 years. I mean, that's a pretty astounding amount of time. Lahav, you spent a lot of time with Gil in the Knesset back when you were the Knesset correspondent. You guys worked very closely together, but there is a lot to talk about with Gil, the different prime ministers that he's covered, the different politicians that he's met, and the different moments that were highlights throughout his career.
I have to say that he has impeccable timing, that his last day on the job is the day that a new election was announced. And I thought I had impeccable timing that I went on maternity leave in 2019, the day that Netanyahu said he can't form a government and we're going to another election. But this is, you know, leaving after 24 years in order to not have to cover the 5th election. So good for Gil.
It wasn't because of the election, but maybe he knew what was coming. And maybe the people in the Knesset knew that without Gil Hoffman, they just couldn't keep it together anymore. But here we go, our interview with Gil Hoffman. Gil, great to have you on the podcast. And this is basically going to be the last podcast that we can still call you the Jerusalem Post's longtime veteran political correspondent and analyst, because you're leaving the Jerusalem Post after about 24 years that you've been with the newspaper. When did you start exactly, Gil?
I was an intern in the summer of 1998, and I officially came on board in the fall of 99 and got promoted to covering politics during the election between Sharon and Barack in December 2000.
Wow.
And what that was basically 24 years of nonstop political coverage.
I have been working extremely hard that entire time, yes. 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, every Arab Shabbat, half the Motzei Shabbats, and recently all of the Motzei Shabbats. Yeah, every day of the year, basically.
And at this point, you're the most veteran political reporter, if I remember correctly. I think that's been the case for a couple of years now since Yoav Krakovsky of Reshet Bet left.
That's true. I am the most veteran political correspondent in any language in Israel. There are Knesset reporters, Tzvi Rosen, Arik Bender, who've been doing this for longer, but covering straight politics day in, day out as a reporter, not just an analyst. It's been me for a while, yeah.
So how many elections has that been?
I've covered 10 Knesset elections and countless elections for leader of the Labor Party.
Four of them in the last few years.
Four of them in the last 3.5 years, yes.
You know, I covered the Knesset for more than 8 years. And so Gil and I would hang out a lot in the Knesset. And Gil was a mentor to me in a lot of ways, really showed me around and got me into the job and understanding things. And I think that, you know, not only for me, but for many, many people in the Knesset, including at the top of the political food chain, will feel like there's something missing at the, you know, they have these weekly faction meetings on Monday afternoons where in most cases you're crowded into a really small room. It's probably a fire hazard. And when they take questions, Gil would stand on a chair so everyone could see him in the crowd, mostly, even though Gil is pretty tall, and ask his question. And Gil often had the most creative questions, like things that no one else would think of. And I think that a lot of people are going to miss that, Gil. I think that the faction meetings are not going to be the same.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I love the people here. I've been following around these members of Knesset, telling people around the world what they're doing behind the scenes. It's been a great honor. This is what I dreamed of doing as a child. And I achieved my dream at the age of 23. And I've been living that dream ever since. And I'll forever be grateful.
When you look at the 24 years and all the different prime ministers and the politicians and ministers who have come and gone, are there a couple of moments that stand out for you in the Knesset in Israeli politics?
I mean, sure. The night that the disengagement passed, and I remember I had my laptop and I actually was following around Netanyahu, seeing what he would do. We ended up going in and voting for it. You actually used somebody's back as a table as I was writing what he was saying. And we were just so shocked that he went in and he voted for it and then pretended to be against it later on. And then when I interviewed him in the election of 2015, and he warned, if you don't vote for Likud, then you get a withdrawal from Gaza, which was just such a total lie. The people voted for Likud and got the withdrawal from Gaza. So I think that kind of stood out. Lahav, do you remember what famous article I have here on the wall in the office?
You had like Ariel Sharon saying, we're never going to leave Gaza, something like that, right?
Correct. The headline is Sharon, I'll keep Gush Katif. And that's a headline I wrote in January 2001 when I followed around Sharon, and he made that promise on the campaign trail. And sure enough, of course, he did withdraw from every inch of Gaza. And I keep that here on the wall, even though it's yellow by now, to remind myself as I write that the politicians are all lying. Every last one of them, and you can't take anything they're saying too seriously.
Well, that's got to be a bit depressing, no? I mean, if you know that everyone you're talking to is lying to you, what's the takeaway?
Takeaway is that when you read the Jerusalem Post, you as a consumer, you can trust the writers, but you can't trust the politicians. We're the mediators in the end. We're the watchdogs. Our job is to show people what they're saying, and then they need to decide for themselves who happens to be telling the truth at that moment.
That brings me to a different kind of question, but in 24 years of journalism, how do you feel that the job has changed?
Oh, it's gotten much more fast-paced. My favorite book is The Little Prince, and there's a tragic character called the Lamplighter. The Lamplighter, when he got his job, just had to work twice a day, every 12 hours, light that lamppost. But then the planet started spinning faster and faster. And now he has to do it every minute. And that's the way I think that journalism has changed, Lahav. That right now, we're writing whenever things happen very, very quickly. It used to be I would attend a press conference at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'd have a deadline of 8 o'clock at night for print. I'd take my time writing it to get it right. Now, when I attend a press conference, I was taught by the great Mayan Hoffman when she was the editor of the internet that you have to send in that story before that press conference ends. You have to be ready. You have to be first for Google Analytics, which now govern media.
So beyond that, does that make politics coverage more superficial?
No, we just have to get it right. We have to make sure that we be quick and accurate. We are saying what the politicians say immediately. Now we can add depth later on. The front lines section on Fridays is a good place to add depth and analysis. And so we're working here as news reporters and as analysts and getting it right. And different articles have different functions.
How do you think like social media has played into this? I mean, for me, like I'm on Twitter all the time, but I think that so many journalists sort of have become like the story in their own right. So how have you seen that change things?
Well, Twitter is a good way to inform our readers immediately and to tell people what's going on inside a particular meeting or event and then cobble it together in context into a story afterward. And it can help you be able to use your phone to cover an event rather than a computer, which is convenient at times. There are reporters who choose to actually become more involved personally themselves into events. I never was one of them, and I respect those who are, but I just tell it like it is.
Gil, I'm curious also in this period of time, how politics have changed in Israel, right? So you spoke about the way the media coverage has changed and the way you've had to work as a journalist, but politics have also changed a lot, right? The way politicians talk, some of their language, their rhetoric, some of their actions, the way they are quick to topple governments, not pass laws, seem to serve self-interest, or has that always been the case? Like, tell us if at all politics have changed and how that's been.
Well, it used to be a lot more ideological, Yaakov. You had your right wing and your left wing, and people strongly believed in their ideology. I was here in Israel during the election of 96 between Bibi and Peres, where everyone believed if the other one wins, we're all going to die. And people all had a bumper sticker on their car telling people who they're voting for. And now the past elections, you don't see a single bumper sticker on the car. And that's not only because of the Facebookization of politics, it's also because of politics becoming less ideological and more personal, more about people. Instead of withdrawal from West Bank, Judea and Samaria, it's to Bibi or not to Bibi, the same overused Shakespearean pathetic cliche. It didn't used to be that way, and it's too bad that it's not more ideological. We haven't had a debate here with all the candidates for prime minister since that election in 1996. In the election in 99, you had two of the three candidates for prime minister. Since then, you haven't had any. And I wish I would have been able to cover more ideological debates during these 24 years where people would have a debate talking about nothing but their views on the diplomatic issue, another one on the economic issue, another one on matters of religion and state, one hosted by the Jerusalem Post in English on matters that appeal to our readers. It would have been great. We've done our best under the circumstances.
The Knesset has become, well, a bit of a circus over time. I don't know if now is actually the worst. I think maybe the worst was in like 2015 to 2018. But on the other hand, there were always stunts, right? I mean, you know, we talk about Oren Chazan. There was also his dad, Yechiel Chazan. Do you think that there's been a deterioration sort of in the behavior of our Knesset members, or do you think that they've always been a little embarrassing?
Members of Knesset have, there's always been characters here, but I like the current crop. They're good people. They're people who genuinely care about the future and want to get things right. In the Norwegian law brought in a lot of quality people into this building. That are hard workers and legislating, and it's easy to just call them clowns. They're here to work.
I mean, being a clown is good. could be considered a job, right?
And except if that's not what you're getting paid for.
Right. Well, but there does seem, I mean, I think what Lahav is saying is that there definitely seems to be a deterioration in the way, the language, the style, the way people speak, the yelling, the cursing even from the Knesset podium by some members of Knesset. I mean, this is a new, this is something new. It's not, you know, 5-10 years ago, we didn't have people going up and using what in English would be four-letter words from the Knesset podium, did we?
So it is true that the stronger language being used now is more intense, and in the past they were more polite and respectful of the institution.
And where do you think that comes from then? Where does that stem from?
Because they want to make the press, and the press has become more shallow as well. They want to make their headlines.
So they're motivated by headlines. We're motivated by creating, by giving news to what's sensational. So it's a vicious cycle, right? Of just everybody giving what each other wants, even if it means the, even if it's to the detriment of our democratic society.
Fair enough, Yaakov. Well said.
So leaving on that note after 24 years isn't that happy, though.
No. I still give the benefit of the doubt here, you know. But what matters to me, Yaakov, is that I'm leaving this place with no one knowing who I voted for in any of the elections. Now, I've made sure to keep the objectivity going in the news stories and the political coverage here during that entire time. It's not only the readers who have no idea, it's the members of Knesset and ministers in this building. None of them know. I'm having a going away party today.
How do you know they don't know, Gil? Have you given them the opportunity to guess?
No, I don't give them an opportunity to guess, and they can't.
Maybe give Lahav and I. Do we each get one guess?
No. We're not going to play that game.
Wasn't there a time when you didn't vote?
No. My 5-year-old has voted 4 times. she puts the little piece of paper in the envelope. But I'm also proud that I'm making it out of here without any corruption charges, without any moral turpitude. The last couple of people who left here after 20 years ended up with a conviction. So I made it out here clean.
Gil, when you look at the prime ministers that you had the opportunity to cover, right? So basically starting with Ehud Barak, Ariel Sharon, Ehud Olmert, Netanyahu, and now Bennett. Who of these men is something different? They're all different men, obviously, but what do you take away from each of them? Is there a way to describe all the group as one, or are they really individuals that, you know, fall into their own category?
Sharon and Peres, it was an honor to cover them and learn so much of them. History, I would talk to them for hours about their lives and what they saw here in this country throughout the decades that they were involved, and wherever they were on the political map, and both of them were everywhere on the political map, and both of them had held so many of the top positions here. I learned so much from them about Israel and about life. Whereas the younger ones, they each had what they contributed, but they couldn't go back in history and talk like Sharon and Peres could. But I've got to know all of them. I've probably interviewed Netanyahu 10 times. And you can see the picture there on my Twitter. He's a challenging person to interview because he at least pretended to have an adversarial relationship with the entire media, no matter who they were, except in the recent years when he got his own media outlets. It didn't matter what question you asked, he would answer what he wanted to, even if it was on a completely different subject. Olmert learned a little bit from Sharon and was cordial with the press, but he also had his agenda. Bennett, I've known since he was Netanyahu's aide back 15 years ago, and there's the story in 2012 that when I had a longer meeting with him when he was just entering politics, and he asked me for Lapid's phone number, and I gave it to him and made that political shidduch. Knowing people before they enter politics, that's a change. that's only happened recently. That's what
there's
makes
a bunch
me,
of people like that.
Sure. You know, Tammy Zandberg, the head of
Maris. I mean, Bennett's prime minister, but...
Yeah, I remember her when she was a parliamentary aide over here. Michal Shear also was a parliamentary aide. Then they ended up bigger and brighter things. There's people I worked with as journalists that are now members of Knesset and even ministers. I remember picking up Zev Elkin in Hebrew University, giving him a ride in his first political event. Look at him now. So I feel old looking back.
You never were attracted to it, Guild? You never had that attraction to run for office like some of your other colleagues?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't wish that on my...
Why?
I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, Yaakov, to be a politician.
I don't know. I think
it's a lot harder than being a journalist.
I think it's harder, but you would at least speak nicely in the Knesset, unlike some of these other people. I don't think you would yell curse
Thank
words
you,
from the Knesset podium. I'm just going to guess.
I would not. Thank you for that endorsement.
Yeah, you have my vote, Gil. I want to move for a moment. So you're leaving the Jerusalem Post, long time. We're sad to see you go. And you're going to an organization, not new, but new for you, Honest Reporting. What do they do over there?
What does Honest Reporting do?
Yeah.
Honest Reporting is the main media watchdog that makes sure that Israel is treated properly in the international media. We lead the effort to ensure the proper treatment of Israel in the international media. We fight the fight in the media in print, online, and social media as well. Any public figure who unfairly singles out Israel or says anything anti-Semitic, they hear it from us. And we're going to intensify that fight and then take the gloves off. It's going to be fun. And I'm also teaching. I also am a lecturer at the College of Management in Rishon LeZion in international communications and political strategy, with a new international school being formed over there that I'm proud to be among the founders.
You know, in your years as a journalist, you became like a really prolific speaker. I know you've spoken in all 50 U.S. states. Are you going to continue that under the auspices of Honest Reporting?
Sure. I will be speaking, giving my expertise that's not going away about what's going on in the news and putting it in the proper historical context, while also adding the fight for Israel in international media, which, by the way, is all people want to know about anyway. Last night, I gave a talk for an organization that had nothing to do with Honest Reporting. I wasn't introduced as Honest Reporting. I was introduced as the political correspondent of the Jerusalem Post. Every single question was about Israel's treatment in the international media and social media. So I think it works together beautifully. And so that will continue in Israel and around the world.
But is that not a change, though, from being a journalist? You spoke about your objectivity before and now moving to, I guess, what's called the Hasbara organization. That's kind of taking a partisan stand to an extent, no?
No, not at all. I would not have joined a right-wing organization or a left-wing organization. I've joined a patriotic organization that does not take a political stance after being in a newspaper that is neither right-wing nor left-wing, but is proudly patriotic and pro-Israel. I'm very much still a journalist, and that has not changed in any way. Just like I would not have felt comfortable working for a media outlet that has a right-wing or left-wing bent to it, and the Jerusalem Post does not.
Well, people will tell
no
you differently about the Jerusalem Post, I get those emails every day, so, you know.
I'm sure you do, but you know, I would get emails criticizing me from the left and right, and I'm very proud that I kept that objectivity going in terms of internal Israeli politics, and that's going to still be true at Honest Reporting.
So then my tip to you at Honest Reporting would be, you also got to call out the people on the right who go too far in things that might not be pro-Israel, but might make Israel look bad. But that would be the way to retain that objectivity.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, in some way, I mean, I found this going from reporting on the Knesset to reporting on diplomacy, which has a lot more to do with, like, the Palestinian issue, for example. When you're talking about internal Israeli politics, it's people have less of an expectation from you to take a side because they, I mean, and what I mean is people interested in Israel who are outside of Israel, because they don't necessarily know or care about the difference between, like, Yamina and Likud anyway. So in that way, it's you don't have to take a side the way, like, in Hebrew, journalists writing in Hebrew, you often get a really good sense of who they are probably voting for.
Well, in the end, Lahav, you know, we're pro-Israel. We're not hiding that. We care about the future of the Jewish state. We want Israel to have a healthy future. And by informing people about what's going on behind the scenes in democracy, we've, I think, made it better. And so I want to thank you for your role in working together with me here and in getting out those messages about Israeli democracy in the Jerusalem Post, co-bylining probably more of my 11,500 articles than anyone else. So I want to thank you for that. And thank you, Yaakov, also for everything you've done in facilitating. Thank you.
Gil, we want to thank you for the 24 years that you've given to the Jerusalem Post, and we wish you luck in going from being part of the media to being now, I guess, the critic of the media and the watchdog over the media. We wish you luck in your new endeavors, and we'll miss you here at the Jerusalem Post. That's Gil Hoffman, longtime 24-year veteran political correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. Take care, Gil.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Jerusalem Post podcast. If you enjoyed it, please give us a good rating on Apple Podcasts and send it to your friends and family. We're available on Apple, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms. We'll be back next week.